This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 26th of June 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 25th of June 2015, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Scheme is safe for now, Boss guilty over two farm deaths, and new boss honoured to take over hospice. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Scheme is safe for now. The controversial £150 million development, which could change the face of Winchester city centre, has survived for now. More than 150 residents packed the Guildhall last week as civic chiefs protected the Silver Hill regeneration. Councillors agreed to keep the deal by 43 votes to 8 because councillors had not been told enough about the scheme. But the approved Liberal Democrat motion kept the termination option open amid calls to improve the long-touted project. Dozens jeered and waved signs urging the council to abandon developer TH Real Estate and start again, amid fears that their scheme could wreck the city centre. Councillor Jan Warwick, a former Conservative cabinet member, told the meeting, "This is a scheme which, before even a brick has been laid, has managed to stir up the very reasonable people of Winchester to march in protest. I urge the council to extract itself from the tired and outdated proposal that is Henderson's limited vision of Silver Hill. Let us all aspire to build something that we will all be proud of. TH Real Estate can launch the scheme if it fulfills its side of the contract, but the meeting heard it is taking longer than expected to process evidence." Council leader Stephen Godfrey warned that scrapping the scheme, approved in 2009, would send a dangerous message, and starting again could cost taxpayers around £10 million. He said, "Does it tell employers that Winchester is a good place to set up business? Does it tell potential investors that Winchester is a safe place to fund future development? Does it tell residents that Winchester is a good go-ahead place in which to live when there will be fewer jobs in a dilapidated town centre?" Facing boos and jeers from the gallery, Councillor Godfrey added, "We will be telling the people of Winchester that we don't really care about what's best for Winchester." Labour Councillor Janet Berry said, "Can we trust a developer who has changed their tune several times?" Councillor Berry added, "They are proposing to implement a scheme that they don't believe is the best possible scheme. How could we now trust that everything has been done in the best interest of Winchester and all its inhabitants?" Liberal Democrat Councillor Martin Todd welcomed the revival of a bus station and affordable houses, but said more changes were needed. He added, "Each option has major implications on cost, on timing, on the council's finances, and on our ability to achieve important public benefits such as a bus station and social housing. We have had no clarity on any of these options, and it would be wrong to terminate without that information." Anti-Silver Hill campaigner Kim Gottlieb, who lost a second vote to end the contract, said he was disappointed but not surprised by the decision. He said, "We will pursue every legal means possible, commercial means possible, whatever route possible to ensure that this city gets the scheme that it properly deserves, not the one that's about to be foisted upon it." Six councillors did not attend the meeting. They were Vivian Achwall, Liberal Democrat, Whiteley, Eileen Berry, Conservative, St Barnabas, Derek Green, Lib Dem, St Luke, David McLean, Conservative, Bishops, Waltham, Rose Prowse, Lib Dem, St Luke, Mike Gough, Southgate, Conservative, Compton and Otterbourne.
Boss guilty over two farm deaths. A farm manager has been convicted of the manslaughter of two workers who died after being sent into a storage tank whilst holding their breath. Scott Kane and Ashley Clark suffocated in the nitrogen-filled apple container where the oxygen level was 1%. They were trying to retrieve apples for a competition. Andrew Stocker, boss of the fruit farm at Tory Peer Lord Selborne's Hampshire estate, had encouraged the practice nicknamed scuba diving. The two men got in through a small hatch in the roof of the sealed container. Stocker, 57, of the Lenx, Whitehill, Borden, Hampshire, denied manslaughter, but admitted exposing the men to a risk of death. He was on holiday in the Maldives when the men died, but had left instructions. Mr. Kane, 23, and Mr. Clark, 24, both assistants at the farm at the Blackmore Estate, Liss, were found lying on crates of apples. Colleagues and paramedics attempted to revive them, but both men were declared dead at the scene. Mark Dennis, QC, prosecuting at Winchester Crown Court, said anyone entering the unit would die immediately once they ran out of air. The apples were stored for preservation in nitrogen. Mr. Dennis said accepted practice in the industry for gathering samples was to use a net to hook out the fruit. The apples were to be entered in the Marden Fruit Show in Kent. Mr. Dennis said, Andrew Stocker was a keen participant in this competition and took pride in his entries. Financial prizes were very modest. However, it was the kudos of winning that was more important. The defendant knew that the only way the best samples could be gathered is for someone to enter and make a selection. Mr. Kane was 23, engaged and had a young child, and had been working at Blackmore Estates since 2009. Mr. Clark, 24, who was also engaged, had been working as an assistant, checking fruit quality. His parents, Ian and Sharon Clark, said the trial was emotionally draining. They said, collecting apples from confined atmosphere units with virtually no oxygen was not a safe and acceptable practice. Whilst we recognise that Mr. Stocker is not a bad man and did not mean to harm Ashley, his negligent actions led to his death. We as a family will be serving a life sentence as we try to come to terms with the loss of a son and brother whom we shall never see again, their statement said. Adrian Barlow of English Apples and Pears Limited, which represents apple growers, said the industry was appalled and shocked by the tragic incident. He said, there has always been a golden rule that you should never enter a controlled atmosphere store until it has been fully vented and the oxygen level has risen above 19.5%. All operatives had reviewed their procedures, equipment and security since the deaths, he said. Police Detective Sergeant Rick Selwood said the deaths were completely avoidable. He said, we hope lessons will be learned that prevent this from ever happening again. Blackmore Estate Limited pleaded guilty to three offences relating to health and safety rules in January. The firm and Stocker will be sentenced on July the 1st.
New boss honoured to take over hospice. Naomi House Hospice has announced the appointment of a new boss to take over from Chris Robinson. Mr. Robinson is leaving for a permanent role with Chelsea Football Club. His tenure as chief executive began in July 2012, and since then he has overseen the near completion of a £4 million refurbishment of the hospice at Sutton Scotney. The role of chief executive goes to Naomi House and Jack Spey's current chief operating officer, Mark Smith. The Board of Trustees undertook a rigorous recruitment process, which Mr. Smith won against a field of strong candidates. He has worked in charity fundraising since 2001, following a career in financial services and IT, working for organisations including Lloyds, Abbey Life and Bupa. Mr. Smith has worked at Naomi House since January 2010, with promotions to Deputy CEO in November 2012 and CEO in October 2014. He lives in Swindon, Wiltshire, with his wife Liz and two children, and will formally take up the role on July the 1st. Mr. Smith said, "I'm incredibly honoured and proud to be appointed as Chief Executive of this wonderful charity and look forward to working with our committed team of trustees, staff and volunteers to further develop our services into the future. We are entering an exciting new phase in development of Naomi House and Jack's Place, and I would like to take this opportunity to thank everyone who supports us and enables the care we provide in the hospices and in the community across the south of England. The brand new Naomi House Children's Hospice is due to open in September. The fully refurbished hospice will provide the very best facility in which to care for life-limited and life-threatened children from across Hampshire." Mr. Robinson said, "I have thoroughly enjoyed leading Naomi House and Jack's Place through a period of real change, and am proud that in the coming months we reopen Naomi House Hospice and local families will instantly be able to benefit from all that the newly transformed hospice offers. I'm especially happy to be handing over to Mark, who is absolutely the right person to lead the charity and ensure we reach even more families who need our help from across Hampshire, Wiltshire, Berkshire, Dorset, Surrey, Sussex and the Isle of Wight. The hospice on Stockbridge Road has been open for more than 15 years but gets very little funding, less than 10% from central government. Open every minute of every day of the year, it needs to raise £7 million annually."
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Copping. Peter, known as Pete Copping, on the 19th of June, aged 71. Herridge. Kathleen, known as Queenie Herridge, nay Ward, on the 17th of June, aged 96. Lowe. Reginald Henry Lowe, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, on the 14th of June, aged 95. Mellott. Janet Claire Mellott, on the 15th of June, aged 71, in hospital. Philbrick. Frederick, known as Phil Philbrick, on the 20th of June, aged 96. Stockman, Peter, known as Pete Stockman, on the 21st of June, aged 80. And next we have Christian comment.
And this week it is written by Roland Ream, and he entitles it, "Flowers have a great message." Men are not often given flowers, although once I was sent so many that I ran out of vases and even buckets. My first wife had been killed in a car accident, and it was as if people were wanting to inject life and colour into a home overshadowed by death. The flowers offered a quiet but defiant message of hope. The Bible doesn't do flowers terribly well. It stresses that they are liable to fade. The Garden of Eden, God's very own paradise, has vegetation, plants that yield seed of various kind, and fruit-bearing trees. The trees are pleasing to the eye, unfortunately for Eve, but the flowers are sadly overlooked. The only thing that matters is how useful they are in terms of food. It makes you realise how lucky we are to be in a climate where flowers do not fade quickly and where we are sufficiently well fed to be able to enjoy flowers, which are simply a delight to behold. K. Currently, Winchester Cathedral is filled with thousands of flowers for the Cascades Festival. The artistic director, Hans Haverkamp, and his team have been hard at work for over a year, planning a design which makes the very most of the architectural spaces. Hans hopes that his beautiful blooms will surprise, overwhelm, and lift our visitors, and they no doubt will. Flowers speak eloquently of the sheer exuberance and variety of creation. They give us a sense that we live in a world not only of scarcity, but of abundance. And there's always the happiness of going home, having seen a new plant with some fresh ideas for the garden. Having flowers in church is hardly a revolution. They're only discouraged in the sombre season of Lent. But having this flood of colour and scent in the building will certainly change the way it feels. Since the Reformation in the 16th century, English churches have generally been quite plain and understated. They have relied on a set of religious symbols, like the cross, to communicate their message more than on natural ones. If there was more of a conversation between natural and religious symbols, this would be amazingly fruitful. We would be following in the footsteps of Jesus himself, who took natural symbols like grain, log, and baskets, and used them to point to a mysterious and beautiful reality beyond the ordinary. It was Jesus who pointed his hearers to the lilies that spring up in the field. They make no effort to look as lovely as they do, and yet the King Solomon in all his glory couldn't match them in splendour. That's the natural level. And his spiritual message was simple and profound. If God is capable of clothing the humble lily like that, then we should not be anxious about our own basic needs. Flowers, if only we listen deeply to their message, have plenty to say about living with greater trust in the goodness of God, our Creator.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Needless to say, there are quite a few letters about the Silver Hill development. The first one is from Councillor Kim Gottlieb, who is one of those most active in leading the discussions about Silver Hill. So we'll start with that letter now.
And Councillor Gottlieb, in his letter, says, "Hesitation is final. Sir, the Council's decision last Thursday not to serve notice to terminate the contract with Henderson has greatly increased the prospect that Henderson will succeed in foisting their disastrous proposals upon the city. The service bit is important to understand, because before the notice actually becomes effective, Henderson get 20 working days to satisfy outstanding conditions and thus render the contract unconditional. The matter is further complicated by there being conditions the council has to satisfy. Had the council voted the other way on Thursday, or better still, on June the 1st, when it was first entitled to serve notice, when it seemed that Henderson were not ready to satisfy the conditions, with a modicum of commercial nous, the council could have made the termination effective. It could then have started afresh and make the changes many councillors say they want. There are multiple reasons why the council made the wrong decision, including the basic problem that the report to committee failed to present a clear and balanced assessment of both the disadvantages and advantages of terminating the contract. nor did it consider the point that in view of the recent judicial review, the council had a duty to pursue the only means available to ensure that the contract could be procured for the first time ever. Many councillors felt they were unprepared to make a decision. The problem is that few of them realised the consequence of not making a decision to terminate, which is that the longer the council prevaricates, the easier it is for Henderson to get their ducks in a row and to secure their exclusive position irrespective of the council's wishes. Fear has also played a part in influence the decision. Its source is difficult to ascertain, but there is a persistent rumour that if the council breaches the contract, it could face a claim for damages by Henderson for up to £30 million. Some councillors have thought that termination could involve a breach of contract, which of course it doesn't, and some have thought that they could be held personally responsible. After 13 years of being wedded to the one developer, it's not surprising that what we see is akin to Stockhausen syndrome. It doesn't help that the council has put no effort into investigating possible alternatives. The last, and now biggest, problem is that by the time enough councillors are prepared to recognise the procurement issues and the damage the current proposal will do to the city, they will find that the council has boxed itself into a corner and that practically it's too late to do anything. In short, if the council ever does want to terminate the contract and finds that either it cannot or that it will cause some other problem, it has only itself to blame. Councillor Kim A. Gottlieb, Havington.
Una Stevens also writes on the same subject, of course. It's headed, Shame on City. Sir, shame on all the city councillors who voted for TH Real Estate Plans last Thursday. You have voted for a scheme that was deemed not to be financially viable in 2009, but miraculously is in 2015. The council has dragged its heels over Silver Hill for 18 years, yet suddenly, it is crucial to take instant action. With no time available to consider what is best for Winchester, when our councillors have a duty of care to do precisely that. Councillor Godfrey's report is shocking in the extreme. He reveals very openly the culpability of the council, which has allowed to continue for 18 years of non-service to the community. Whose fault is it that Friarsgate car park had to be closed? Whose fault is it that the premises of Friarsgate Doctor's Surgery are unfit for purpose? Quite simply, the blame must be laid with the members of the council, who are experts in enduring neglect. Any caring householder who appreciates that premises require continuing attention if they're not to fall into decay, but evidently this home truth, excuse the pun, is lost to the majority of our councillors. Two judicial reviews have been conducted thanks to the good sense and commitment of Councillor Gottlieb. Two leaders of the council have had to stand down recently because of the Silver Hill debacle. One would think that such facts alone would trigger caution in the minds of sensible people. Oh no. Clearly a majority of our council believe that they know infinitely better than those whose best interest they were elected to represent. Never has Winchester's motto, many in men, one in spirit, been so brazenly thwarted. Go ahead, city councillors, destroy Winchester. Wake up, though. This will be your legacy in the history of our lustrous city, which deserves so much better. I suggest that plaques should be positioned on the walls of the Guildhall, enlisting the names of all those who had conspired so ignobly to betray us over the past 18 years. That was written by Una Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
And continuing the theme, Peter Grant writes, Plan for Future. Sir, the major emphasis on the plans for the future of Silver Hill is misplaced. with councillors concentrating on such matters, admittedly important, as the bus station, affordable housing, and a new medical centre, where their principal consideration should be on the creation of an attractive environment for future generations. Their main aim should be the creation of an area of the city which, in 100 years' time, the inhabitants will be saying, what an enlightened generation it was that planned that attractive, award-winning part of Winchester. The attraction of Winchester comes from its diversity of buildings laid down over many centuries. And this Silver Hill area should never contain buildings designed by a single architect, as it is now proposed. Yes, of course, subject to an overall plan, but then parcelled out to different builders and architects, but giving adequate allowance for adequate open and recreational areas. What is in danger of being adopted can best be described as a mini Basingstoke, with row after row of uniform lumps of so-called modern masonry. Ach! It could be so helpful if the voice of those who live in the city could be heard in this debate. The local residents are the people who ultimately have to live with the result. It is interesting to observe that the, quote, cabinet of the current Winchester City Council, so-called, actually, it's the Winchester District Council. The administration does not contain a single councillor who represents one of the six city wards. How can their hearts all be in the right place? Peter Grant, Simmons Street, Winchester.
In this letter, Pip Billington says that the councillors are out of their depth. Sir, the City Council meeting last Thursday to decide whether to terminate the Henderson over Silver Hill was ghastly to watch. The councillors are out of their depth with this complicated issue. Councillor Sanders spoke with candid clarity when he said the council should terminate the Henderson contract, then sell off the land and rid themselves of the terrible conflict of both owning and wanting to develop the land. The council has no business trying to be property developers. They should stick to what they do best, which is exercising planning regulations. Pip Billington, Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but the next letter is about Silver Hill. And it's headed Petty Politicians. It's written by Arthur Morgan. Sir, the extraordinary meeting of council to debate the proposal to terminate the development agreement for Silver Hill was, for those of us who witnessed it, a disgraceful exhibition of petty, vindictive and partisan conduct levelled at Councillor Gottlieb and those members who had called this inconvenient meeting. The result which followed was a blatant example of council filibustering, i.e. they're employing a process of obstructing legislation by means of delaying tactics. The leader, Councillor Godfrey, trotted out the same old misleading defences for an indefensible scheme. When challenged by questions he obviously could not answer, he had to call upon his legal eagles, whose obfuscations shed no new light on the crucial matter. It seemed outrageous that the proposal for termination was discussed only after an amendment proposed by Councillor Thompson was discussed and voted on, which made the signalled reason for their being somewhat futile. Councillor Thompson's fine words will, in the end, butter no past steps, as her calling for some more time in order that hitherto undisclosed, undetermined material will be made so that Cabinet be advised accordingly will be a nonsense, and she will have played us into the hands of the developer. We have already been made aware Cabinet has not been transparent with us over its dealings with Henderson, where Cabinet's actions resulted in a critical judicial review. The question arising is, are Council and Cabinet really likely to consider material at this stage which will confirm the need to terminate the development agreement, a determination they are determined not to allow? No, of course not. And furthermore, do we have any confidence at all in this present council and cabinet to act in our best interests over Silver Hill, especially with a leader who is publicly admitted to have difficulty choosing his socks in the morning? That letter was written by Arthur Morgan, Edgar Road, Winchester.
At last, here's some light relief. And Roberta Brockman writes about a shop's occupier. Sir, in last week's Hampshire Chronicle, Belgarum wonders what was previously at 63 High Street, the sign partially revealed by current work on the shop front. I still have my parents' Warren's Winchester Directory, 1953-54, which lists Bertol Cleaners Limited, dyers and cleaners, at number 63 High Street. Above there lived Walter C. Burkett in 63A and Edward P. Faithful in 63B. Many of your older readers will remember Muriel Croft in Black Swan Buildings across the road, where we bought our knitting wool and needlework accessories. Ah, happy days. Okay. Roberta Brockman, Stropbridge Road, Winchester.
Work ruined trail, says Barbara Wood. Sir, I need to correct some of the inaccuracies in Councillor Gibson's letter, chronicled June the 18th, about the Meon Valley Trail. The work done on the trail has totally spoilt a local amenity which had been used by many different users. Scalpings have been laid, which has made it dangerous and very uncomfortable to cycle or walk on, and also made it hazardous for horses to now use this bridleway. I cycled from Brockbridge to West Meon and found the large scalpings dangerous and horrible to ride over. Only one cyclist on it over the 3 hours we were there. We met a couple from Worthing, walking with their dog. They returned to the car park fairly quickly, as they and their dog hated the surface. Local people hate it, and there is a big Facebook campaign to replace the scalpings with a surface suitable for all users. That's from Barbara Wood, Brockbridge, Droxford.
And this letter is written by Bob Thompson, and it's headed Bike Light MOTs. Sir, cars and motorbikes have to go through an MOT test after 3 years after registration. Part of the test is to check the aim of the lights, to check that they do not blind oncoming road users. So, why am I blinded even in daylight by cyclists' cat's eyes neon lights? Let's introduce the MOT laws to the Lycra thugs. Written by Bob Thompson of Maitrey Close, Badger Farm.
And Len Strong writes about wild, in inverted commas, churchyard. Sir, I recently visited my hometown of Alsford and went up to the cemetery to pay respect to the some of my relatives' graves and was disgusted to find part of the churchyard had been allowed to go wild. I could not find my grandparents' graves, and an uncle who has a headstone has a yew tree growing out of the plot. I'm grateful that my sister keeps our parents' grave tidy, but I am disappointed that this part has been allowed to get into such a sorry state. Surely, if there is no family members left to tend the graves, they should at least be flattened and the grass kept trimmed, so that those with headstones and curbs can be identified. Len Strong, Ripley, Derbyshire.
Peter Songson asks for better water for dogs. Sir, it's great news that the South Downs National Parks Authority has installed a watering spot on the South Downs Way at Loma Farm. But since it's about 500 feet above sea level, they feel that they need to turn it off during the winter to avoid frost damage. Fair enough, but as we approach midsummer, should not this notice be removed? People are better at putting up temporary notices than they are taking them down again. In fact, the water for humans flows easily, but the dog's bowl is green and stagnant. My dog, who freely drinks out of revolting puddles, turned her nose up at this green water. Is it really necessary to turn it off in winter? We live at a similar altitude not far away, and our garden taps have not been damaged by frosts over the last 13 years, so I doubt if this is really necessary. I can't believe that this custom-built device for dogs does not have a system that changes the water from time to time. Peter Somsken, Preshaw, Upham.
We next go on to the items of historical interest from 200, 150 and 25 years ago. The one from 200 years ago is a little bit obscured, but it relates to the sort of aftermath of the Battle of Waterloo.
Yes, 200 years ago was June the 26th, 1815, and it's headed Enemy Retreat Heard. During the whole day yesterday and till late in the evening, there was a desperate engagement towards the plain of Flores. The cannonade, which was terrible, was heard distinctly here. An immense crowd of inhabitants of this city went out of the gates of Namur and Hull. The discharges of artillery succeeded with rapidity and announced a continued fire of an immense quantity of artillery. Towards 8 o'clock, the firing became more distant, which made it supposed that the enemy had retreated, and this opinion has been completely confirmed by the accounts received this morning.
100 years ago, June the 26th, 1915. Germans driven out. On the Western Front, the Germans, using gas and burning liquid, made a desperate attack on the Tranchée de Colombe on the heights of the Meuse, but after progressing, they were driven out by a French counterattack. The Germans have also been counterattacking without success in the so-called Labyrinth in Lorraine near Lintree to the east of Luneville and on the Reicherkerkhof in the Vosges. In the eastern theatre of war, the most important fighting is taking place on the banks of the Dniester, the battle up to the present developing in our allies' favour.
50 years ago, June the 26th, 1965, Bishop gives warning. The Bishop of Winchester, Dr. Faulkner Allison, whilst urging every effort to foster better relations between the Anglican and Methodist churches in the diocese, also added the warning on Tuesday that they should not be in too much of a hurry to bring about the complete unity of the church in Britain if it meant jeopardising the eventual union of the Anglican with the Methodist church. In his presidential address to the Winchester Diocesan Conference, he spoke about the resolutions recently passed by the bishops and clergy of the Church of England, which constituted a notable step forward in their relations with the Methodist Church.
25 years ago, June the 22nd, 1990. Blow to opposition. A blow to hundreds of people living in the beautiful Test Valley who fear that plans for a sand and gravel extraction operation will ruin the countryside was delivered in the High Court on Friday last week. More than 500 residents, including former Master of the Rolls Lord Denning, failed to persuade the court to overturn former Environment Secretary Nicholas Ridley's decision to allow the controversial gravel pit at Kimbridge. The scheme involves extraction of building sand and gravel from farmland to be transported across the valley to a dispatch and storage site near the A3057 Romsey to Stockbridge Road.
Next we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, which, needless to say, is also about Silver Hill. Then we have a letter from Westminster from Steve Brine. And then finally, in this section of the recording, the first person comment.
So here we go again. Editorial comment. Silver Hill's scheme is good for most folk. So, city councillors chose to spurn the chance to fundamentally alter the Silver Hill scheme. It was almost certainly the last chance to derail the TH real estate proposal. Pretty soon, as campaigner Kim Gottlieb says in a letter to this newspaper, it'll be too late to change course. It cannot be denied that most people, not just those who take an active interest in public life, are comfortable with the plans, especially since the developer has U-turned and includes a bus station and affordable housing in the scheme. There's an old saying, the best is the enemy of the good. This is a good scheme. The campaigners seek an unobtainable best. It's time to build it.
This is the letter from Westminster, written by Steve Bryan MP. A constituent stopped me in the supermarket the other day and asked whether we are back in Parliament after last month's general election. The answer, for the record, is absolutely. MPs returned to the House on the Monday after polling day, and for me it's been a return to my old job in many ways, but also pastures new as I take up my new role in government at the Department of Health. I said during the campaign it would always be priority NHS for me, so I am pleased to be working alongside Jeremy Hunt, and it's been a busy start as last Friday the Health Secretary announced the first step in our New Deal for GPs, delivering on our manifesto commitment to offer seven-day access to GP appointments. Since 2010, the number of GPs has increased by 5%, with an additional 1,700 GPs working or in training, delivering an estimated 45 million more appointments per year than in 2010. We are also investing £1 billion over 4 years into improving buildings. However, we must go further to meet the demands of an ageing population, and that is why we will invest in 10,000 more clinical staff at GP surgeries, including 5,000 more doctors. Local people will know that I believe passionately the NHS is something to be valued, protected and improved. But you can only have a well-funded NHS with a strong economy. Illness doesn't just happen on weekdays, so we want everyone to be able to access GP services 7 days a week. My determination is we will do this by working in a way that is credible to patients and obviously those actually delivering primary care. I am already receiving feedback on this new deal from constituency GP practices and look forward to receiving their ongoing comment. Locally, and while we know we have some of the best schools in the country, it's not universal, so we want to do better. Every child has the right to achieve their potential, and good or outstanding schools are a good place to start. So I was pleased to visit Oliver's Battery Primary School last Friday, truly a school on the up after many difficult years. New head Faye Wood is no stranger to a challenge, and it was good to hear details of the turnaround plan ahead of the next Ofsted inspection this autumn, as well as to meet many of the children. I look forward to working further with the senior leadership team over the coming months and years. Meanwhile, tomorrow I am visiting the new Westgate Lower School as they hold an open day. Our School Places campaign in the last Parliament led to £10 million of investment from Hampshire County Council in Winchester schools to meet an acute shortage of primary school places, and it's always good to see bricks and mortar on the ground. I'm also very proud to have Hampshire's first all-through school in the city. Finally, for this time, I'm once again throwing open my allocations of Prime Minister questions tickets to my constituents in a series of free and fair ballots. I did this throughout the last Parliament, and so many people had the opportunity to see this weekly event live. Although we don't yet know who David Cameron will be facing across the dispatch box, I suspect demand will be similarly high.
Joanna Lewis writes, City sinks like Titanic. Anyone disappointed at the recent news that a replica won't now be built of the Titanic? Worry not. Winchester Council voted last week not to determine its contract with global property dealer Henderson. It was legally entitled to do this with no penalties, thus releasing the city from the cheap, ugly and outdated monstrosities planned for Silver Hill. The Winchester we know and love, historic, unique and vibrant, is now like a sinking ship. The decision also means the City Council sees itself as above the law. That's the same law which applies to you and me. It cares nothing for the High Court judgment that our council was in serious breach of the rules for procuring services, rules designed to ensure value for money for taxpayers and to prevent corruption. So we had no open competition to design a plan for one of England's most ancient and treasured cities. Just one developer, one monolithic design, and one motive: easy profits. So, if the council doesn't care that it has broken the law, then why should we, the public, obey it either? Why should we pay our council taxes? Are we not supporting institutionalised law-breaking if we do? This is the mood amongst the public, increasingly frustrated at the farcical shenanigans. At numerous points during the meeting, people became so vocal in their incredulity at the ludicrous arguments peddled by Henderson supporters, our new Lady Mayor threatened to halt the proceedings. "I have to ask you to leave," she warned. "We're not leaving. This is our city," someone shouted, resounding cheers. A week on, we are still asking why. Why vote for something that has been declared as dodgy as a FIFA bank account? "We need more information," the Lib Dems bleated. Like the band playing on the deck of the great ship in 1912, they preferred to ignore reality and accept inevitable oblivion. Why is a legal judgment not enough? Why would any responsible, sane council remain with a developer that reneges on its design agreements on grounds of cost and then does a U-turn? And, as one councillor alleged, Henderson has already made plans to sell on the scheme. Unsurprisingly, the leader of the Tory council looked at sea, at times channelling the spirit of Donald Rumsfeld's known unknowns and unknown unknowns, although if he was auditioning to play Captain Mannering in Dad's Army, the remake, then it was a winning performance. As the fabulous Jan Warwicks dryly observed, 18 years of planning suggests a council operating outside its sphere of expertise. Ouch. Conservative councillors might have voted against termination, but many looked as uncomfortable as a vegetarian in a kebab shop. Repeatedly, the speeches made in support of the termination made perfect sense and connected with the public feeling. Kim Gottlieb cut through the politics like a hot knife through butter, summarising what the vote was really about. Is this scheme good enough for our ancient and wonderful city? My new hero, Malcolm Wright, one of the longest-serving and respected Tory councillors, implored colleagues to vote with your conscience, vote for the people of Winchester. Regrettably, most did not. So, it's useful to remember the public's long tradition of standing up for their city. In the 1700s, the council sold the 15th century Buttercross to a wealthy squire. For those councillors not familiar with Winchester, it's opposite Specsavers. But the townspeople got together and physically removed it being removed. The spirit is once again being stirred up. The Winchester Deserves Better campaign continues. So will the legal challenges. For the first time in my life, I heckled. When the decision not to terminate was announced, I found myself shouting, "You're a disgrace!" I regret saying that now. "You're a complete disgrace" would have been much more accurate.
Right. After all that.
I see that. Who is that woman?
Right, no special announcements this week. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 26th of June, the sun rose at 10 to 5 in the morning and will set at 25 past 9 in the evening. Wednesday of next week, 1st of July, sunrise is at 5 to 5 in the morning and sunset will be at 25 past 9 in the evening. So evenings are beginning to draw in, I'm afraid. If you know anybody else who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And there's a laminated card with this information inside each wallet, should you need it. But please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. We now move on to items of general news interest.
Wax coat for statue of king. He defended the country against Viking conquests, and now King Alfred is being pampered with a wash and wax. The bronze statue is getting a scrub and polish with a new layer of protective wax to stop the metal from deteriorating. Work was due to start on June the 15th, but was held back until last weekend. Now the scaffolding is up around the 5 metre statue and the scent of polish can be smelt in the Broadway. Lawrence Flood of Bronze Restorations Limited is completing the £4,425 project funded by the Winchester City Council. Portfolio holder for estates, Councillor Steve Miller, said, "This new coat of wax will restore the statue's burnished bronze appearance and help to protect this city icon against everything the weather can throw at it." Sculptor Hamo Thornycroft created the statue in 1900 to mark the 1,000th anniversary of Alfred's death. It was unveiled in 1901 and the £5,000 cost was funded by public subscription. The work is expected to take about 2 weeks. And there is a picture of a workman with some sort of gun, heat gun, dissolving the old stuff and putting on a new coat of wax to the head and shoulders and the mighty sword that King Alfred is holding.
Thousands of flowers. There's no doubting it's a beautiful building, and now Winchester Cathedral has some added pizzazz as its flower festival returns. Three designers, alongside more than 300 devoted volunteers, have come together to install thousands of flowers, including 12 new species, in the medieval church. At the launch on Tuesday, Downton Abbey star Hugh Bonneville managed to sneak away from filming at Highclere Castle to officially open the 5-day event, invited by the Dean of Winchester. Mr. Bonneville told the Chronicle, "I love this city and it's a great opportunity to see what the fantastic flower arrangers of Winchester have come up with. I get the feeling that it's quite surprising and a modern flower show, which is an exciting idea. I know I will be intoxicated by the smells as well as the colours." Cascades is being staged by the Wessex and Jersey area of the National Association of Flower Arrangement Societies, NAFAS, and installations have been created by groups across Hampshire. Under the helm of artistic director Hans Haverkamp, alongside designers Pauline Hurren and Bill Dixon, it features both contemporary and traditional designs. The team said they have never worked on an event this large, and it has taken 15 months to organise. Mr. Haverkamp said, "I liken it to overthrowing a small country with an army of lovely ladies. It promotes friendship through flowers, and that's the nicest thing about it." The festival, from June the 24th to the 28th, aims to build on the success of Symphony of Flowers, which grew 16,000 visitors in 2013. The first festival was in 2003, and Simon Barwood, spokesman, hopes it will now become a regular feature on the cathedral calendar. He says the 2013 festival was very popular. It takes a couple of years to organise because we have so many volunteers. And there are quite a few photographs accompanying this article, and I fear that I don't have the words or the cleverness to be able to do them justice, but there are swathes of flowers around a large pillar. There are flowers hanging from the ceiling, enormous cascades of ferns, and in the flower festival in the main transept, there are just such extraordinary, beautifully coloured examples of flower arranging, worth going to see or inhale the scent of.
Church's rebuild is underway. One year since an 800-year-old Hampshire church was devastated by fire, work to rebuild it is getting underway. Ropley villagers were left heartbroken on June the 19th last year when St Peter's Church was almost completely destroyed. All that remained were the outside walls, and it took some 6 months before the church was secure enough for firefighters to investigate, and no cause was found. Now the Friends Group and residents are hard at work to ensure it will be rebuilt. Various structural surveys have been carried out to assess the extent of the damage. Andy Bonner, Rebuild Coordinator, said it is hoped that outline plans will be done by the end of the year. He said, from our point of view, it is all going well, but getting it done will take a phenomenal amount of time. We are starting to get things done now. It's just going a little more slowly than we would like. Everybody's been working towards getting it sorted, but there's not a great deal that people can do until we have the plans. The church was insured for £2.6 million, but until plans were drawn up, Mr. Bonner said it is hard to tell how much will be needed to be raised. He added that to repair, recast and replace the bells would cost £75,000. The fire left the roof, bell tower, medieval architecture and doorways devastated. Even the contents of the church safe was exposed to such heat that only fragments of the register survived. Vicar of 24 years, the Reverend Royston Such, who has since left, could only stand and watch in horror as around 70 firefighters battled to put out the flames.
A fashion show. A charity fashion show returns to Winchester this summer. The fundraising event, which aims to showcase both independent boutiques and national brands based in Winchester, takes place on August the 22nd at the Guildhall, to raise money for a local children's charity. After being set up in 2012, the Winchester Charity Fashion Show has been able to raise funds for several not-for-profit organisations, and this year's event will benefit Naomi House and Jack's Place. The show director, Mitch Allen, said, "Winchester has such a great fashion following, it seemed the perfect place to host our show. This year we are supporting Naomi House and Jack's Place. I couldn't think of a better charity to raise funds for. This year we are bigger and better than ever before. We have had great support from the local community and our wonderful sponsors at Denplan and Capital FM South Coast. The team are currently scouting for models, and anyone wishing to take part should visit winchestercharityfashionshow.co.uk, where tickets can also be purchased. They cost £15 for general admission of £35 for the hospitality package, which includes a three-course pre-show dinner at Hotel Duvin on Southgate Street.
Quacking turnout for River Duck Race. I can't believe I've just actually said that. It was every duck for itself when crowds gathered at a biannual race along the Weir. Alsford residents gathered for the charity fundraising event, which saw painted wooden ducks mosey down the river. Each racer was lined up at the bridge before they were unleashed. The day wasn't just about finding out who would be first past the finish line. The Alsford Pigs Association event saw children take part in hula hoop competitions, spin plates and gorge on food and drink served by stallholders. Vicky Tiplady of Alsford Surgery took home the prize, which was given to her by Association Chairman Bill Biggs. Chairman Richard Morgan said that though the day's takings have yet to be fully counted, about £8,000 was raised.
Hotel snapped up as part of Big Deal. The first boutique hotel in Hampshire has been bought up as a part of a multi-million pound acquisition by a Singapore firm. Winchester's Hotel Devon, which opened in 1994, is one of 29 properties formerly owned by the Malmaison and Hotel Devon Group, that is MHDV, all sold as part of a £363 million package. Fraser's Hospitality UK Holdings Limited, a subsidiary of Fraser's Centrepoint Limited, said the acquisition makes the firm one of the leading hospitality players in the hotel industry. Founded by world champion sommelier Gerard Bassett and hotelier Robin Hudson, the Hotel Devon in Southgate Street is regarded as the template of the modern boutique-style hotel. Fraser's Hospitality Chief Executive, Xiao Peng Sun, said, MHDV provides a tried and proven DNA in the boutique lifestyle segment for us. The purchase of Malmaison and Hotel Devon perfectly complements our brand portfolio and gives Fraser's Hospitality a platform to expand into the fastest growing hospitality sector. We look forward to building on this success with future development in the UK, Europe and Asia.
No jail time for drug dealer, aged 19. A young man from Winchester has narrowly escaped a prison sentence for drug dealing, despite the judge telling him he ought to send out a message for others to learn from. A court heard how Liam Walker, aged 19, of Bar End Road, was handed a 16-month sentence, suspended for 18 months, after pleading guilty to an earlier hearing for possession with intent to supply Class A drugs. Prosecutor Rob Welling told the hearing at Winchester how Walker had bought and sold MDMA and ecstasy, as well as amphetamines and ketamine, to fellow students. Police were called to the defendant's address after a handyman spotted a box of pills along with a bong and a grinder, the court heard. They found extensive evidence on his mobile which proved Walker's wrongdoings. Mr. Welling argued Walker should face a custodial sentence as he also invited students to buy drugs from him, though Jody Mittle, defending, said such texts were few and argued for a lesser sentence due to his good character. The judge, Mr. Recorder Ian Lawry, QC, said, "He's a student, he has a brain, he knows that drugs are silly and dangerous, and he sold Class A drugs. Whether he was invited, he's at it, and at it for some time. What can he do to reassure me he's not going to go back into this and sell drugs to his friends to fund his own habit?" Miss Mittle said Walker was anxious to equip himself with strategies to cope better around drugs in the future. The judge called Walker to the stand and asked him why he should not be sent to prison. He said, "I want to change my life around and do something productive in society," Walker responded. "I've seen the error of my ways and I think I should be given the chance to do that." Judge sent him down to the cells to take a good look at the four walls while he retired to consider the sentence. Walker was also handed 120 hours of community service and a victim surcharge. The judge added, "If you let me down, believe me, I'll take a less tolerant view. Do you understand? It's clear that you have future promise if you apply your mind to your future education. Make sure you put your life in order. You are free to go."
Gear up to fight heart disease. People in Hampshire are urged to join the fight against heart disease and take part in vital fundraising events this summer. More than 20,000 runners, hikers and cyclists are expected to take part in one of British Heart Foundation's South East Challenge events, with two taking place in Hampshire. Participants in the Hampshire Harbours Bike Ride, taking place in Fareham, Gosport and Southsea on Sunday, July the 12th, can help the national charity raise £2 million for essential research. There is also the South Downs Way off-road bike ride on Saturday, July the 18th, from Winchester to Eastbourne. Martin Mears, regional head of events for British Heart Foundation, said, "Join them and help us make a huge difference to those affected by heart disease every day. There are 883,000 people living with cardiovascular disease in the south of England alone."
Counties, forces honoured. Crowds lined Winchester streets for a grand celebration of the county's armed forces. The ceremony began in the High Street on Monday, though a drizzly start meant that the scheduled performance at the Buttercross by the band of the Royal Logistics Corps was moved to the Great Hall. But that didn't stop the contingent of around 50 service personnel from the Royal Navy, Army and the RAF from marching up the High Street. Scores of schoolchildren from St Bede's Primary, Henry Beaufort and King's Secondary Schools clapped and cheered, waved flags and playfully jostled to get a closer look. The band gave a rousing performance before Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend James Atwell, read a biblical extract and led the prayers. Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, addressed the public, councillors, military personnel and dignitaries. "Today is a very important occasion in the life of our county and all over Hampshire. Flags will be raised in honour and support of our armed forces, both past veterans and present service men and women," he said. "These flags remind us of the debt of gratitude we owe to all. Hampshire is the home of all three services. Their families live here, their children go to our schools, and they are part of our community. As Lord Lieutenant, I have the privilege to meet many of our servicemen and women, and I know how much the support of the public means to them." The band played the national anthem as the flag was raised. Councillor Roy Perry, County Council leader, said after the ceremony, "For Hampshire, it is a very important event, and we were one of the first signatories of the Armed Forces Covenant. We have more armed forces personnel stationed in Hampshire than any other county." City Councillor leader Stephen Godfrey, himself ex-army, said, "We have a very considerable history of links with the military dating back many centuries. It's wonderful having one of the army bands come down and entertained the people." The ceremony marked the start of Armed Forces Week. The flag will be flown for the remainder of the week, culminating in Armed Forces Day on Saturday, June the 27th. Military units taking part were RAF Personnel Administration Training Wing, Worthy Down Support Unit and HMS Nelson.
Pupils dig in to assist farm archaeologists. With brushes, tape and artifact bags at the ready, Winchester schoolchildren have been delving into the past of Barton Farm. Year 9 students from Henry Beaufort were invited to the Keller Homes development site for an archaeological dig to investigate remains spanning over 4,000 years. Pupils identified as gifted in subjects including science, technology, engineering and maths were selected to help uncover the mysteries of the new 2000 home development, some of which dates back to prehistoric times. David Creed, one of the school's maths teachers, said, "The students found the visit incredibly interesting, particularly being able to experience the everyday life of an archaeologist. I believe that many left the visit considering the possibility of archaeology as a potential path to follow into further education." Keller Homes has been working with a team from P-Construct Archaeology Limited for for several months, who have found the earliest discovery on the site to be a human burial dating back to the Bronze Age. Known as a beaker burial, known as a beaker burial, it is named after the vessel buried in the grave about 4,000 years ago. PCSA's project manager, Paul McCulloch, said, "The archaeological investigation has demonstrated just how long people have been using parts of Barton Farm to bury their dead, as a place of settlement, and for a military camp in the 18th century. The dig at Barton Farm has revealed important archaeological evidence."
Nominations open for Country Gongs. There is still time to submit nominations for the annual Hampshire Countryside Awards. The scheme aims to recognise young people, voluntary groups and businesses across the county that are trying to make the area a nicer place to live and work. The campaign to protect rural Hampshire countryside deadline is Tuesday, June the 30th. The lead sponsor for the 2015 awards, which is now in its ninth year, is the Southern Cooperative, which supports a variety of community groups. Entries for the awards are welcomed from all areas, including charities, businesses and community groups, large and small, will be accepted. Michael Rescall, director of CPRE Hampshire, said, "The awards are designed to celebrate a beautiful, diverse and living countryside that everyone can value and enjoy. The spirit of this can be found in a product, a business, a service or a social enterprise. The four categories are Community and Voluntary Award, The Young People, Rural Enterprise and Radiance Green Buildings Award. The winners will be announced at a ceremony on Friday, September the 25th at Avington Village Hall.
Broadband Target. A programme aimed at providing superfast broadband across the county has now reached 2 million homes and businesses. Hampshire County Council's superfast broadband programme reached its target at the end of this financial year of 54,000 premises, allowing more people to switch on to speeds ranging from 24 to 76 megabytes per second. The council and associated partners are investing more than £26 million, which is hoped will help at least 96% of households by 2018. Broken down into cabinets, new areas included in the rollout programme include Alresford, Bishop's Waltham, Medstead, Wickham and Winchester. The latest additions bring the total number of cabinets in Hampshire to 242. The County Council says it is working with government, as well as BT, to find solutions to reach the final few percent of the county, located in some of the more remote places. The government has set out plans to improve services to those experiencing less than 2 megabytes per second.
Anger as phones are still off. Residents are complaining after about 100 phone lines in Winchester have been cut off for more than 2 weeks. Some people are also unable to access the internet in streets off Romsey Road, including Woodfield Drive and Killam Lane. It's believed to have started on June the 11th and be down to a broken cable in Romsey Road. Residents were told work would start on Tuesday. Sandy Vining, aged 66, retired of Woodfield Drive, said, "It's awful. There's been no communication. The way BT have handled it is total rubbish. I want to raise awareness of the plight. There's vulnerable people left cut off and nobody knows what's going on." A spokesperson for BT, when asked about residents' complaints and what work is being done, said, "A faulty underground cable has affected service in the Romsey Road area. The repair work is extremely complex and time-consuming and also requires traffic lights for the work to be carried out safely. We apologise for the inconvenience caused Openreach engineers are working as fast as they can to restore service as soon as possible. There are around 20 reported faults.
This article, which has rather a strange headline, is in fact a very heartwarming article, as you will see. The headline is Silage Wrapped in Pink. 8 months ago, Rachel Waldron's life changed forever. At just 31 years old, she was diagnosed with stage 1 breast cancer and faced months of therapy before life could return to normal. Now, the farmer of Winchester's Sarum Road is determined to help others like her by injecting a splash of pink into the countryside to raise cash and awareness for charity's breast cancer campaign and Breakthrough for Breast Cancer. The 95 silage bags, which are bagged-up pickled grass, at Beechcroft Farm are now fluorescent pink and will stay in storage until October when it's fed to the cows. It was the idea of contractor Steve Gregory, and Mrs. Waldron said she is very grateful. She said, "Most of the cost of the bale wrap goes to the charity. I was first diagnosed in October last year, went through surgery in November, chemotherapy in January, and I had weekly treatments which finished about 6 weeks ago. Now I am on targeted therapy treatment until next year." She added, "It was all a massive shock because I'm a very active, fit person. As a farmer, you have to be very fit." Mrs. Waldron is expected to make a full recovery.
Hundreds partake in town road race. Hundreds of people lined up to race around Alresford on Sunday. The Alresford 10-kilometre road race returned to the market town, starting and finishing at Aylesbury Park and heading off into the countryside. There were races for adults and fun runs for youngsters. And Matt Bennett of Southampton Athletic Club emerged victorious with a time of 33 minutes and 45 seconds, while a new women's course record was set by Carmen Sanchez Toribio of Winchester and District Athletics Club, who ran home in 36 minutes and 29 seconds. And there's a photograph here of the start of the, it looks like the under-10s race, with some very, very enthusiastic, happy and determined-looking youngsters setting off for the start of their race.
Well, on that very happy story, we conclude our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and thanks also to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you are able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.